Craft matters in small ways, like how coffee is made or how a wooden table is built piece by piece. And in not so small ways, like how your money is cared for. At UBS, we elevate investing to a craft. We deliver our services with passion, expertise, and meticulous attention to detail. This is what investing means to UBS. Not just work, but a craft. Discover more at ubs.com/craft. The value of investments may fall as well as rise, and you may not get back the amount originally invested.
Hey, everyone. It's Asten Herndon, political reporter for The New York Times. When I became a journalist, I made a promise to my readers, like the way that doctors take an oath to their patients. I committed to bringing the truth to light, no matter which party, business, organization, or person I'm reporting on. I have to be persistent. I have to do research, and I have to push back when someone tries to hide or spin the facts. And I know I'm going to write stories that both Democrats and Republicans don't like. But that's what The New York Times has been doing for more than a century, and that's what we're going to keep doing. We believe the public deserves the right to make up their mind based on the facts. So if you want to support this kind of work, you can subscribe to The New York Times at nytimes.com/subscribe.
Have you ever seen The Strokes before?
Come on.
Have you?
Are you me? Of course I've seen The Strokes before.
I honestly don't know what your relationship is to The Strokes.
I literally own the CD British release single, CD single of Is the of
Do you,
the first
you like this?
I have the one with New York City Cops on it.
You like it? You like,
yeah, it's like, yeah, good enough for that kind of music. Welcome to Bobcast Deluxe, your goofy goblins of weekly cultural review. I am John Caramonica, critic of The New York Times.
I'm Joe Coscarelli. I'm a journalist at The New York Times. I'm a reporter. I'm a reporter.
You are. That you are. It's been a busy week in culture, and we're going to talk on two really big topics today. First, okay. Olivia Rodrigo's album came out. It is the second Olivia Rodrigo album. It is called Guts. The last one was called Sour. Listeners of regular podcasts will have heard the episode with Karen and Lindsay that we did a couple days ago.
Part one.
We are here with more takes, alternate versions, outtakes, bonus footage, etc. Also, we have, you know, Joe has to speak on. It's too important a topic,
right,
for Joe not to speak on.
Yeah, it's grown women on Olivia Rodrigo and then grown boys on Olivia Rodrigo.
Grown. And then, to be frank, I don't know if Zach Bryan would have ended up a topic on this week's show.
Yep.
Zach Bryan has had the number one album in the country, self-titled, for the last 2 weeks,
yep,
which is great.
Mm-hmm.
Big Zach Bryan fan.
Mm-hmm. Big album.
Long album. Number one song in the country as well.
Last week
with Kacey Musgraves.
Yep. Bumped by Doja this week.
I mean,
good
Doja
for her.
As we've said, Doja doing great things.
Yeah.
But Zach Bryan had the biggest week ever. He both has the number one album in the country and also got arrested for arguing with a police officer.
Politely.
And so we're going to talk a little bit about the up and down week of Zach Bryan and also the up and down relationship to authority that Zach Bryan has been embodying. We've got a question about Cameron, who we love and some podcast people also love. And then we've got songs and snacks. Guts, Joe, you were away for a few days.
Yeah.
So you weren't at midnight, unlike me.
No.
Like,
I wasn't plugged into the Guts discourse from the jump.
Okay.
Although, obviously, it's been a few months building now. So I was ready, but I wasn't on it. I was on vacation.
Okay. I was not on vacation. I was working. Guts, to me, is... it does a very good job of continuing the thing that Olivia Rodrigo did on the first album that was so striking on the first album, which is here's a person with a big voice, interested in both piano balladry and also interested in sort of some rock or rock affiliated modes, has like a real direct line to her feelings, and does a really, really good job of matching the intensity of feelings to the intensity of the production.
Yes.
Guts is part two of this, but the subject matter, the thing that I wrote about in my review, the subject matter is different. On the first album, the subject matter is a teenage heartbreak in this kind of like very cloistered way. The subject matter of Guts is like, I'm famous, I'm seeing the world, I'm at parties, I'm at clubs, I'm dating guys, I'm... a famous person who is potentially beefing with other famous people, and it's terrible, and it's annoying, and it's stressing me out.
That life is, like, this new life of mine is not all I thought it would be.
Yes, not what it's cracked up to be. It's not what I thought it would be. And I know it maybe looks great from the outside, but on the inside, it's not really what it is. Tell me a little bit about, where do you think Guts sits in relationship to Sour, first of all?
I can't decide if we should talk first about the sound and the craft of Guts or the narrative and the meta-narrative. Mm-hmm. Because my overarching thought about this album and the way it's been talked about in its first week is that I wonder if albums can be popular, and artists and singles even can be popular outside of their dedicated niche without a gossip element, without a headline narrative, who is this song about type question, or a political conversation. You know, we've seen it the last few months with country songs, the Jason Aldean song, the Oliver Anthony song. This is a big Taylor Swift driver of attention. Right. And I do think that Guts feels like it's cutting through the noise, but I wonder if it would without riding on the back of what it did last time, which is who was Driver's License about. Now it's which of these songs is about Taylor Swift, which of these songs are about the same person that Driver's License is about, or, you know, like this Redditification of culture where everyone's trying to solve a problem or get to the bottom of something or come up with a theory of the case. And I so I guess I answered my own question, which is that we're going to start on the meta level.
Yeah, sure.
But like Guts is an amazingly crafted album with some really good songs. But would that have been enough to make Olivia Rodrigo the topic of conversation that she is without the rest of it?
I mean, personally, I'm not sure. Forget music. I'm not sure that almost any culture right now works purely on the vector of artistic intent of what the thing is meant to be.
Sure.
You have to anticipate the meta commentary. You have to anticipate fan service. You have to anticipate the memes. I mean, this is something that we used to think was novel 5 years ago or 10 years ago.
Yep.
But then whether it's Drake in music or, you know, the Marvel ecosystem or, you know,
I think Lil Nas X is a good example of this, that he really mastered that, of creating conversation that lives on top of the work.
Right. And to be honest, with Lil Nas X, I know for myself, the work itself isn't necessarily that interesting, but I don't actually view the art of Lil Nas X as music. I view the art of Lil Nas X as conversation creating.
The whole project.
Yeah, that to me is what he's doing. I mean, it's like this term gets bandied around, but it truly is perfect. It's a performance art.
Yes.
It's an art of performance and a performance art.
Yes.
Olivia is obviously not doing the same thing, but she learned from Taylor, having Easter eggs rather on a record. Like, that's valuable, having people talk about it. I also think you talk about craft as if there aren't, I mean, look, I'm not going to say there's 50 well-crafted albums that came out on Friday, but let's say there's 10, 3, 7. There's some
high numbers.
There's some well-crafted nobody pays attention to.
Yes.
Craft in and of itself, I mean, it's like, I feel like we're in a rockism debate again, right? It's like craft in and of itself is not sufficient, and low-key never really was sufficient, except, I don't know, in the 60s?
Yeah, okay. I know what you mean.
You know,
yeah,
like,
this is not totally new.
No, it doesn't feel totally new. And also, like, what I think Olivia is doing is trying to hold fast to this other thing you're talking about, which is like, I make these kinds of records. I make these kinds of piano ballads. I make these kinds of rock or quasi-rock songs. That's what I do. And if you want to interpret or try to extract some meta commentary out of it, that's for you to do. And she's not blind or deaf to it, but I think that the almost like stubbornness of the record is like, I just do this thing. Much like on the last record, I did this a similar version of that thing.
Though I do think it's interesting that, and we can just come right out and say what we're talking about, mainly the question of like, is there a song or more about Taylor Swift on this album?
Do you want to play a song that maybe is about Taylor Swift?
Sure, but which one are you going to pick?
Well, I already picked on last episode, so you can pick on this one.
Okay, I want to start with The Grudge.
Yeah, okay.
Because this one feels purposefully vague, and that sort of lean into seeming like they're songs about romance, but are not actually, but are about friends. You know, this is a part, big part of the Swiftie lore, specifically with her relationship with various friends and frenemies of hers over the years. And I think Olivia, she's very knowing in writing this way. And I think The Grudge is a really interesting example of a song that on its surface level sounds like it's about a break, a romantic breakup. Then you think about it some more and it could be something else, could be deeper, could be a business dispute with a former hero. And then the third phase is like, ah, maybe I was overthinking it and this is just about a boy. So let's listen to a little bit of it. Try to be tough.
I had picked the other one, just for the record.
Lacey.
I picked Lacey.
Right.
I think the internet chatter has moved in the direction of The Grudge. I feel like
it started with Lacey.
I kind of feel like, I'm at least in my version of the internet, it started there and it moved towards a grudge. Obviously, we don't want to be overly deterministic about this kind of thing.
Sure, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. And also, I am confident from the whole of this album that many people have disappointed Olivia Rodrigo.
Yeah, including herself, first and foremost.
Yes. I mean, we are talking fair weather friends. We are talking romantic partners. We are talking idols. We are talking business relationship partners. And we are talking Olivia Rodrigo. The self-flagellation on this record is an 11 out of 10.
Which I want to get to, because this is, I think, my main complaint with the content of the record.
Okay.
But
just go.
Keep
just
going. No, no, I want to save it for a moment.
Okay. So to me, sort of saying such and such is about Taylor, such and such is about this, like, I don't think any song is 100% about that person. But I think the way that that relationship has unfolded, or more pointedly not unfolded, has informed how Olivia relates to the larger sphere of pop stardom. I almost would venture to say, had there been a more evident embrace
between Taylor and
From Taylor to Olivia.
Yep.
And again, this, we're speculating here, but had that happened, Olivia might be a little less ambivalent about what it means to have arrived in this world, assuming that you would be welcomed with open arms. Now, if we're being honest, I low-key think it helps her that Taylor has been a little bit cool to her.
I do too. That's the other thing.
Because it really paints her as her own performer.
Yes.
It really allows her the freedom to make music on terms that make sense to her.
Yep.
And that if they're in discourse with Taylor Swift songs or ideas, if they're in discourse with that, it's passing. It's not like we can sit here and kind of like belabor it and like worry the scab or whatever. But these feel like Olivia Rodrigo. Like when I heard this album, she's only made one other album, but I listened to this album and I was like, these are Olivia Rodrigo songs. Like that feels real to me. That's already a thing.
I also think the vagueness helps her. The is it or isn't it? The will they or won't they of their relationship? And that sort of, I think there is a savviness at play with her. Both, you know, two of the interviews she did ahead of this album, one with Karen Gans, our editor in the New York Times, in which she says she hasn't seen the Eras Tour. One with Laura Snapes in The Guardian.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And Laura presses her, you know, basically saying, did Taylor hurt your feelings by taking a songwriting credit on your last album in some behind the scenes machinations? Is this song about her? Pretty much asks her flat out. And she says, I was surprised people thought that. And then she says, I'll never tell people who my songs are about. And that's, to me, is like a no shuts that conversation down. And maybe you don't have a second week of discourse. And right. I do think she saw how well the discourse worked for her the first time around, was people piecing together the quote unquote mystery of who Driver's License was about.
Which was, to be, we should say, Olivia did not arrive at driver's license completely bereft of context.
Right.
She's on, I don't know how popular the Disney Channel show was or the Disney.
Yeah, but she's on a popular show.
She's on a popular show. She was known in the tween ecosystem. She had a built-in fan base or the opportunity for a kind of like running start fan base.
Yeah. Well, this is maybe where I bridge the conversation about
form and content.
Yeah, because it reminds me, this whole album is Hollywood Records core. It's like 2003 to 2008 Absolutely. Hollywood Records. Hollywood Records mm-hmm. is the sort of offshoot label of the mm-hmm. Disney Corporation.
Yep. It's where a lot of Disney Channel, OG Disney Channel stars released their first like
and second and third. And
right, they're yeah. non-Disney music.
Yes.
Even though we're still under the kind of like aegis of the Disney Corporation.
And the genre of those records was spiky pop rock.
And also we talked about Demi last, you know,
yeah.
last and episode.
Like, and Hilary Duff, a couple Selena Gomez and the Scene albums. I'm thinking specifically of Kiss and Tell. You know, that one, there's a song on there that's like, could be on Guts. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a couple songs on there. And then the early Miley Cyrus albums. So Breakout, that's one of the Miley Cyrus albums. Mm-hmm. I remember Seven Things when it came out. And Seven Things is, to me, maybe still the best song of Miley Cyrus's career, even though she has a lot to compete with it at this point, singles-wise especially. And this is like a kiss off song, and this is a breakup song, and it's a Disney Channel narrative. I remember this being part of the conversation when this song came out, and this was when Taylor was spelling letters and code in her liner notes mm-hmm. about who her songs were about. You know, this is what Olivia was raised on, both within the Disney Corporation and also as a woman of her age.
Can I also add one more detail to that, which is one of my most vivid memories? So I'm going through the Miley discography here, and like there's three Miley albums, 07 Meet Miley Cyrus, 08 Breakout, 09 The Time of Our Lives, and then 2010 it's Can't Be Tamed,
right?
And then it's like we're off to the races. Yep. Like, you know, we're Bangers is around the corner.
Yeah. You smell the Mike Will Made It in the air.
Absolutely. But the thing that I remember very vividly from writing about these kinds of artists in this moment, I don't think that this generation of Disney stars would have had the level of true pop breakthrough that they did had there not been the tabloidization of the Britney and Christina era. Because what you had with Us Weekly in the early 2000s was this acknowledgement that, yes, these young women, they're incredibly famous, they're good at making music, they make hits, they're topping the pop charts, etc. But you know what? They're also public figures. They're also potentially messy. Their dating lives are fair game. I mean, this is stuff that, like, in the rear view, obviously doesn't look good, mm-hmm. but at the time was largely unquestioned. I mean, if you were looking at a year's worth of Us Weeklies from 02 or whatever, probably a full quarter of them had a pop starlet on it. And I think it changed the discourse from the 80s and 90s of how female stars were talked about. And by the time that era kind of came to a close, or at least that generation of stars mm-hmm. were no longer the most famous people making pop music, it changed the level of expectation of, okay, well, when the next wave comes, we can also engage with them in the same way as we engage with the Britney and Christina. So that's one thing. It became all the more kind of, there was like a tactile thing happening where it's like, oh, and they come from Disney. So any flicker of rebellion,
yep.
any tiny, tiny hint that something might be awry or amiss. And in the rear view, when you hear Miley and whoever talk about what was really going on, clearly there were things that did not make it to the tabloids. But even something with musical choices, that first post-Disney Demi album, when Miley is making this transition to Can't Be Tamed, all of that stuff kind of went hand in hand with the tabloidization of this generation of stars. And so I think what Olivia is also learning from is not simply this is how you break free, no pun intended, how you break free, but also that you are going to be scrutinized when you do it. And maybe you should play with, maybe playing with that or using that, weaponizing that, taking control of it is a valid strategy.
Here's what I will say about The Grudge and Lacey.
Oh, I thought you were going to talk about self-flagellation.
No, I will talk about self-flagellation. Okay. I don't think that either of these songs are about Taylor Swift, but I think that the mood carries through. You know, I think like there's a little bit of compositing and there's just enough doubt in the songwriting to leave that open as a possibility, which I think is...
It's intentional.
Intentional and savvy. And everything, it can be about whatever you want it to be about.
Yeah.
And that's on purpose.
It could be about an office dispute.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. And even the dropping of specifics sort of leave the door open. Like, there's the line in The Grudge, it's like that phone call in May or whatever it is.
Yeah. Right.
Mm-hmm. A specific phone call, which like... Sure, Sour came out in the spring.
In May.
Taylor gets credit on the song in July. Mm-hmm. Like, could they have had a phone conversation between that?
Yeah, or sure. Maybe May just rhymes.
Or which is funny you said that because Sabrina Carpenter has a line on one of her songs mm-hmm. where she says maybe blonde just rhymed.
Maybe blonde was the only rhyme.
And implying that driver's license wasn't about her mm-hmm. necessarily. But then the fans
are done. Is there anything more baity, though, than to be like, maybe the song's not about me?
Wink. Yeah, wink, wink. No, but then the fans have done some digging, and I guess in the Olivia Disney Plus documentary, she talks about getting broken up with on a Friday in May. Like, people did the calendar search to see, like, oh, it was a Friday. You know, and I just want to be clear. Like, I'm a grown man. None of this matters.
And also,
but I can't help but think about it when I listen to the music.
But also, the way that you're talking about it, you know what it really reminds me of? You remember there was this thing on the rap internet, like let's say 7 or 8 years ago, where it's like, we're going to find out what day Ice Cube was rapping.
On It's a Good Day. Yeah, we're going to do the math about
like, yeah, like which day did the Lakers play the Supersonics and da-da-da, what was the weather like and the da-da-da.
Yeah.
It reminds me a little bit of that.
Yeah. That it's just to funnel content onto the internet.
Yeah, I think sometimes people who make this kind of like meta content, and the meta content could just be tweeting about it, whatever, but it's content predicated upon having a thinky reaction.
Sure, and we're obviously guilty.
That's literally, this should just be called meta content, this show. There's some sense that it's truth seeking or fact finding.
Right.
And there is no real relationship of truth. And I feel like, especially in the last few years, like at least for me personally, I've become unburdened. Like I know, like I don't have any expectations that that kind of content is going to necessarily enhance my perspective on an album.
Right.
But
you'll like be able to sleep soundly knowing that like one Nicki sub is really about Cardi because of like the date that they ran into each other at Fashion Week or whatever.
I can live. I can live.
This podcast is supported by the Freedom From Religion Foundation.
I'm Ron Reagan, an unabashed atheist, and I'm alarmed by the intrusions of religion into our secular government. That's why I'm asking you to join the Freedom From Religion Foundation, the nation's largest and most effective organization of atheists and agnostics, working to keep state and church separate. Phone 1-800-335-4021, 1-800-335-4021, or visit the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org. Ron Reagan, lifelong atheist, not afraid of burning in hell.
This is A.O. Scott. I'm a critic at the New York Times. What I do and what the other critics here do is part of the same project that all of the journalists at the New York Times work on every day to give you clarity and perspective and, above all, a deeper understanding of the world. When you subscribe to the New York Times, it's not just here are the headlines, but here's the way everything fits together. If you'd like to subscribe, please go to nytimes.com/subscribe.
Do you feel that it weakens the album for you because you sense that there is something in the songwriting that's designed to stoke this kind of discourse? And like, not that there's some pure songwriting. It's like, you know, Zach Bryan songwriting and Olivia Rodrigo songwriting. Actually, both very emotional people.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like both like adequately emotional, I think. But is there something in that that just tightly sours it? Sorry. Tightly sours it for you.
It's not that I think it's that cynical. Like, I think that as far as mainstream American blockbuster pop singers, like, I think this album is very pure. But I think if you come up in an ecosystem so aware of your surroundings and how your peers have been treated and what they've gone through, and, you know, she came up through Disney, like, and she came up as a Taylor Swift fan. Like, I don't think any of that can be divorced from how she's learned to be an artist. And I think that she is extremely bright and really knows how to market herself without overdoing it. And I do get the sense listening to this album, it feels like she's an A-plus student executing writing exercises.
Yeah.
And it's like, mm-hmm. write the best possible song about X scenario. And then she knocks it out of the park. Mm-hmm. But it's so well done, like almost too good at it.
Okay, but here's, okay, so this is an interesting tension maybe between how you feel and how I feel. I talked about this in the review. I think she does a very, very good job of accelerating the road from have an experience, have a feeling, have a sentence about it, turn that sentence into a lyric, turn that lyric into a song. I'm not saying these songs aren't labored over. Like, obviously, I'm sure there's hard work. But there is a sense of immediacy. I think often when we think of great pop songwriting, we're thinking of who has smoothed the most, who has polished the most, who is making a song where you can't feel where the seams are. Mm-hmm. And I don't feel that about these songs. And I wonder, you do feel that.
I feel that.
You think it's the performance of that.
I think the bumps are underlined for maximum relatability,
mm-hmm.
which isn't to say that being a 19-year-old woman, now 20, who is suddenly the most famous person on the planet, like, is not difficult. Like, oh my God, that seems horrifying.
So you think the self-flagellation is just protesting too much?
I do. And mainly because it is one note.
I literally can't believe you think, this. And I don't. Because if you would have asked me from a distance, like 6 months ago in the abstract, I would have assumed it would have been the opposite.
Okay.
Way.
Here's what I realized. And I don't mean to.
You got emotion pills. You got emotion pills. Anyone against anyone?
Yeah, anyone against anyone. Female songwriters on their sophomore album after taking over the world. But.
Oh.
Olivia also loves Lord. And she also loves melodrama.
Mm-hmm.
And specifically, she said in her Vogue 73 questions that her favorite Lord song is, do you know?
No, I didn't watch 73 questions.
Liability.
I mean,
she made an entire album of liabilities.
Yeah.
And Liability is a great song.
Should we listen to Liability?
Let's listen to a little bit of Liability.
Great record.
They say you're a little much for me. You're a liability. You're a little much for me. So they pull back, make other plans. I understand, I'm a liability. Get you wild, make you leave. I'm a little much for it.
This is Lord saying, it's really hard to be friends with me. I might write a song about you. You can't get a hold of me anymore. You know, I'm too much. I'm too much. Mm-hmm. This entire Olivia album is about being too much and about mm-hmm. making small mistakes mm-hmm. in life. Every single song.
Yeah.
Every single song.
Even the song that's not about that, which is Pretty Isn't Pretty, is also about that. As on the previous album, there's like one song that's like topical.
Right.
This is the topical song on that album. Yep. But even this one kind of goes hand in hand with the like, I'm having trouble navigating, woe is me.
You know where this really got to me for the first time is on Ballad of a Homeschool Girl, mm-hmm. which again, every song individually, I'm like, I can't believe she pulled this off. Like, they're so well written, well performed. The sound is like reminiscent of stuff, but just original enough. Like, the tightrope that she's walking is insane. Like, mm-hmm. she's so good at it.
And Dan Nigro,
her producer mm-hmm. and co-writer, which, like, again, I think the fact that they've made these two albums, basically just the two of them, is like, more people should do this. Like, it works.
It's like Drake and 40.
It works. But on the outro of that song, she says something, I'm paraphrasing, we'll play it. Mistake your wife for your mom, or called you the wrong name twice. Can't think of a third line. Like, she does a little meta thing where she's you know. And I'm just like, you called someone the wrong name twice. Like, and then the next song, same thing. You know what I mean? And it's just like, this is just to come back to the melodrama thing. Melodrama is also about how fun it was to become a rock star.
To be fair, Lorde is a more complicated artist.
But this is what I'm saying. It's like, what I wanted a little bit on this Olivia album, I was just waiting for one song where she's just like swagging out. Like, where she's just like, in addition to being a piece of I am also the
Okay, so two things. One, and this came up on the last episode, and I think Lindsay was pointing to this. Where she's doing that on this record is in vocal tone.
I was going to say, you hear it in the sound. The sound is fun.
And it's in how she's singing. It's in the playfulness.
Yeah, Bad Idea, right? I think is a good example.
I lived through it and it sucked, but I kind of came out on top. But like, I'm not saying the I came out on top problem. I'm singing that. I'm open to that read.
I just want, like, just flex on us a little bit. Like, you're Olivia Rodrigo.
Album three.
You're Olivia Rodrigo. Album three. I know you went to some good parties in addition. For every 100 bad parties, you went to one good party. For every bad...
Who was DJing?
For every bad backslide with an ex, like, you were like, you know, like, she took over the world. Like, tell me about it. And show me, and to me, the downs of that land more in a way that Lorde and Drake have mastered. The downs, the emptiness of success, I'm here now, this is it, feeling, hit harder when you also tell me about your wins.
I agree, but also here's my counterpoint to that. There is something about this album and about its similarity to Sour that makes me wonder. And again, we don't know. Was this album rushed? And I don't mean rushed in the sense that like 20 minutes after the last album came out. How much labor was put into it? I pointed this out sort of slyly in the review where I sort of returned to the stupid. Like, she returns to stupid in a few different songs.
Like, I'm so stupid?
Yes, I'm so stupid. I behave stupidly, whatever. But the word itself. Mm-hmm. And I thought it's pointed, not so much because she's repeating the word stupid, but she's repeating a word that I would notice is repeated. Mm-hmm. That says to me, maybe I didn't take the time to write a more complicated or think through a lyric. You know, the songs feel like interwoven, but they also maybe feel like a tiny bit harried in that way. And that's why, like, your notion of, like, they are the performance of casual as opposed to actual casual. I don't know. To me, I don't know if that's actually right.
I do think there's some rawness here and some, like, I went through it, then I came home and I wrote a song about it, and now you're going to hear it all within a pretty collapsed time frame. I'm cool with that. Mm-hmm. Like, I get it. I just feel like she, as a child actress, again, I'm assuming a lot here. Like, I've consumed a lot of Olivia Rodrigo putting herself out there.
Sure.
I feel like she spent so much of her life maybe trying to please people and be relatable, which is part of what she sings about.
Yes.
And she hasn't been able to let that go to the point where she could say, like, also, like, nobody can touch me. You can't be where she is without having some sense of self-confidence.
I actually don't know. Because I do think there's some...
She's so good. She's
but there's
so
some
good.
Fundamental instability. I think she's still trying to overcome, like, I'm coming
the
from
doubts.
This Disney guy. Yeah, like, and the doubts that are in her own mind and the doubts that are, like, ordinarily attached to a person arriving suddenly as a pop star from a unconventional background.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know. I do think that's... I think album three... is going to be the, like,
look at me. Like,
I think that's what album
can't touch me now.
Like, this feels like, again, forgive the thing, but it's like, this is an era. Like, Sour and Guts together,
yeah,
that's an era.
Yeah.
Even though the subject matter has evolved, the overall presentation hasn't really. I do think she's due. And unlike Taylor, we're like, with Taylor, we were always like, when's it going to be stripped down? Like, after the Red 1989.
Maximalist phase.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, when's it going to strip down? My thing with Libby is, like, when's it going to smooth out? When's it going to bulk up? When's the neon coming?
Mm-hmm.
And I think she's capable of it.
I was waiting for her green light. You know what I mean?
But I think it'll happen. And I think, I mean, you saw the tour, right? Like, I was very impressed with her on stage, but it definitely felt like this is the first time I'm doing this.
Yeah.
I mean, I literally went to the first show. It's like, this is the first time I'm doing this at this scale. And I'm sure she was also more confident over the course of that. But you really got the feeling that she was still kind of like getting her sea legs. And I think we are still, even though she's incredibly famous, even though she's very good at the work, I still think she's getting her sea legs a little bit.
Yeah.
And I think that thing that you're looking for, that's the next phase. That's phase two.
You know where I did feel it, and we can, maybe we'll go out on this, but Get Him Back is like, to me,
great song.
That's the one here because it's not as one-dimensional as the pure self-flagellation.
Yeah.
It's like, I am both victim and perpetrator.
Of course.
You know, and the play on words, like, this is where the writing exercise, like, I'm just like, you're knocking it out of the park with, like, playing around with this phrasing.
Yeah.
Making the bed, I feel like, is less so. Like, that's playing with the idiom, like, I made my bed, now I have to lie in it.
But
like,
I also thought it, but I also...
Subtly?
Yes, but I also think...
Is that the play on words?
I think so, but I also think it's potentially making up the bed after you've...
Sure, that's one of the entendres. Yeah.
I think so, yeah. But I agree, it's a tiny bit too quiet.
Yeah.
Whereas Get Him Back is.
Yeah. Like Get Him Back has swagger.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted a little bit more swagger.
So does All American Bitch. Like, other songs here have that.
Okay, so All American Bitch, she alludes lightly to Lana, maybe, like, Pretty When I Cry, all that. And Lana would have sang All American Bitch with a straight face.
Right, but Lana's a fundamentally, like, of course. Yeah, it's like a totally different thing.
I guess I just, like, I'm like, you did it. Like, I don't mean to nitpick or to, like, I'm only saying this because, like, she's so good at what she does that I'm just like, you're not fooling me. Like, I know you know how good you are. I know you know.
I actually don't. I don't know. Okay. I don't know if that's true.
Yeah.
But what I do think is that give it two more years.
Yeah. All right. But I hear it, and then
people will be backlashing and be like, we missed the Olivia that didn't quite know how good she was. You know, like, we missed that.
So
we'll be back on Popcast Deluxe for that discourse in 2025.
Of course. Let's listen to Get It Back. So good.
Speaking of deeply emotional songwriters, as we said, Zach Bryan.
Yep. Zach Bryan is huge. Can we just say, like...
Been huge.
Of course, but, like, this is the thing where, like, you get all of the momentum that you earned on the last album.
Is really
on this album. Yeah, like...
To this.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
And he's taking advantage of it.
Yes. Yeah, so, like... I feel like he's huge, but also in that way that maybe people who watch don't know. I mean, should we primer Zach Bryan?
But I think he's crossed that line. I think in the last month he's transcended.
Don't think we have to primer it at all?
No, yeah. Talk about who Zach Bryan is.
All right. So Zach Bryan is from Oklahoma. He is a country-ish singer-songwriter. Definitely some Springsteen in there.
Oh, yeah.
Some Neil Young. Yeah. Some
Dashboard like, Confessional.
Definitely some of that era for sure. So maybe some John Prine in there as well.
Would you say he's an outlaw?
No, but I would say that his mugshot was on. Yeah, let's put that. You see what we're talking about. Zach Bryan started recording songs when he was in the Navy and put them out on his own. And built up like a rather substantial fan base before he was ever discharged.
The man went viral.
The phrase that when I interviewed Morgan Wade's manager about Morgan Wade going viral was hillbilly viral, which
fire.
Or like on the hillbilly internet.
Yeah.
Which is to say, I would imagine like progressive Southern internet, basically.
Yeah. A lot of Facebook.
Probably, yeah, like Facebook and Twitter, yeah. Basically. Yeah. Zach Bryan went viral on Twitter. I mean, yeah. In like the year of our Lord 2020, like he went viral on Twitter.
Yeah.
And so by the time he came out, he had this huge fan base. He started touring and then put out American Heartbreak, which was a very long and to my ear, very profound. This is my number one album of whatever year came out. Last year,
yeah, right?
I don't know. I've lived a lot of lives since then. Yeah. That's all I have to say. And Zach Bryan, when I interviewed him, and Zach Bryan has done basically this is like maybe the only profile still, or like maybe there's one other, I don't know. But when I interviewed him and I went on the road for a couple days, he was playing to 8,000 to 12,000 people, basically.
Out of the gate.
Like, he doesn't, like, I don't have to show up. It's got nothing to do with me or us or anybody who does what we do.
Yeah.
Nothing to do with playlisting.
So purely organic.
Truly, the only place I have seen men sing that intently and that emotionally is at a Drake concert. Seeing bros in like backwards ball caps, oversized t-shirts, and flip-flops, like absolutely belting to the skies these emotional songs about decimated masculinity. It's very, very strange. Like, I mean, it's great, but it was really weird. I go to a lot of concerts, a lot of different genres and a lot of different styles.
Yeah.
To see that naked emotion being expressed by thousands of young men was wild to me. Zach Bryan has a new album, self-titled. As we mentioned earlier, he had the number one song in the country
with Casey Musgraves. Remember everything.
Should we play that?
Yeah. For a little slow tear roll.
It's not my favorite song.
Good song, though.
It's all right. A cold shoulder, a closing time. You begging me to stay till the sun rose. Strange words come on out of a grown man's mouth when his mind's broke. Pictures in passing time. You only smile like that when you're drinking. I wish I didn't, but I do. So there's a new album. It's self-titled. It's the number one album in the country. He's done it again. He's going to continue doing it. Zach Bryan has, much like Olivia Rodrigo, an alleged... Do you think Zach Bryan's self-flagellation is as performed as you think Olivia Rodrigo's self-flagellation is, Joe?
Zach Bryan has lived a different kind of life.
That's not what I asked you. That's not what I asked you.
No. And you know why? Because I saw how he reacted to getting arrested. And I know that this man, like, is going through it.
Yeah.
Internally with trying to be a good person and, like, seems to think that he committed some sort of grand sin when really he's, like, the most polite young man I've ever seen get arrested on a dash cam.
So, yeah, you can see the footage on TMZ. We'll play a little bit of this footage.
In the second time, it was happening 3 days.
Well, he just got caught with speeding. I'd write him a citation.
I know, I get it. This is my security guard. I'm just waiting for him. It's taking a long time. I was just curious, sir. I'm sorry.
You need to get back in your truck. Because you're interfering with officer discharge of duties right now. You need to get back in your truck or go to jail. I don't care which. I'll go to jail. I'm done. All right.
Zach Bryan was arrested in Oklahoma. He's from Oklahoma. He was arrested in a different part of Oklahoma.
Yeah.
His security guard, he was traveling with his security guard in separate cars.
Yeah.
Security guard was pulled over for speeding.
Yeah.
Zach Bryan stops to not be without a security guard. And at some...
He was also driving across the country with just him and his dog.
To watch to go see the Eagles. To go see the Eagles. This is like a guy after your own heart. Like, it's unbelievable.
Incredible.
And so Zach Bryan has, at some point is like, this is taking too long. Which I don't know how long a stop of that nature is supposed to take, but whatever was too long, got out, and the cop says, get back in the car. And Zach Bryan says, well, take me to jail. And the cop goes, okay.
Like, that was basically it. And like, we learned that this happened first from Zach Bryan's apology video.
Yes.
His mugshot, you know, his arrest is reported. The mugshot goes hillbilly viral with a little bit of crossover.
Mm-hmm.
He was looking sharp.
Mustache looks great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then Spotify puts his mugshot as the picture on the Outlaw playlist, et cetera, et cetera. And then he posted an apology video.
I did go to jail. I didn't play favorites. And I was an idiot today. And my decisions did not reflect who I was as a person. And I just want to make that clear.
He says he was frustrated because he'd been pulled over
a couple days prior.
Days prior for seemingly some minor infraction.
Doing 55 and a 54.
Yeah. Given a hard time by the officer. And he felt like they were on a power trip. The thing that's most interesting to me about this arrest, especially in light of what's been happening with country and the sort of, you know, some people online are calling it like the gangster rapification of country, where they're like making it cool to be right-wing vigilantes or whatever it is.
Right.
And Zach Bryan is very much not that. He's made clear he doesn't want to be considered a Let's Go Brandon type artist.
No, I mean, and in concerts that I've been to, like, he has shushed people saying that, chanting that phrase.
Yes.
Also, I think, you know, Zach Bryan, and this is also true probably of Oliver Anthony, like, there's a little bit of a, like, not left, not right.
We're free thinkers.
Yeah, exactly.
These are free thinkers.
These are free thinkers. These are like some other secret third thing.
Yes.
These are some other secret third thing thinkers.
But so watching Zach Bryan bend over backwards to apologize.
Both
and to
during
say,
the, no, yes. First of all, apologizing during the, like, he's in the car, handcuffed, complaining about the handcuffs, and then apologizing. And then saying, I've got to go. And then apologize.
And being like, I know all the cops. They all came to my show.
Yeah, exactly.
And then apologize. Like, and then just be, and like, he keeps saying, like, this isn't who I am, you know, like, I acted out. Like, and he said this in the apology video, but he also was saying this stuff in real time before he even gets put in the squad car. He's like, oh, I'm sorry. Like, I got out. I got like,
I got lippy.
Like, I shouldn't have. And then he's just gone, you know, and you see this push and pull online in the Peanut Gallery of like, oh yeah, like ACAB, like Zach Bryan, like new hero, defund, whatever. And then you have him saying like, I really respect the police.
And like, he said something it was phrased in, I thought, like a slightly ambiguous way, which is like, I support the police as much as anyone can, which could be read as I support the police the most of any person in America or as anyone can, which is like maybe not as much. But for Zach Bryan, who has, I think, rather studiously tried to toe the line and frankly, as you say, not get caught up in what seems to be the conventional either quasi-right from a couple of years ago or right-tilting politics of country music, doesn't consider himself a mainstream country singer, isn't really played on that many stations. Like, he does live sort of outside the country ecosystem. He's just a country-ish performer.
Yeah.
But all of a sudden has to put out effectively pro-cop statements.
Right.
And that, but then that puts him in an entirely different conversation. And also, I just couldn't help but think, like, what if the same setup in the same small town is a black performer?
Oh, of course.
You know, like, so the idea...
I mean, that it's a very cordial arrest.
Yeah, it's. I mean, the weaponization of privilege is there on his part because, you know, somebody else gets lippy with the same cop, but who's not a white guy who's from Oklahoma. Maybe that goes differently. And so it was interesting to me to see him essentially be like, I support cops, but maybe not to say... I understand that, like, this could have gone differently and, like, frankly, like, I don't recommend anybody get entangled in these kinds of things. Like, just sit in the car and wait.
Basically. Yeah, I mean, from a, going back to our original conversation, like, from a meta-narrative perspective, like, he's being put in front of people he's never been put in front of before. This getting arrested while you have the number one album in the country is like...
Is that a first? That can't be a first.
No, it's not a first, but...
We're sure.
Yeah, I can think of a few other times I've written about similar scenarios. you know, but... So
it's a good listicle. It's a good, he's both it's a good getting, BuzzFeed listicle.
Getting spotlit and among people who might... not quite know who he is.
And also don't know how to taxonomize him.
Yeah, and he's really trying hard not to alienate his fan base. I mean, he does... I think there's no arguing that he has... He might be a purple artist, but he has a red state fan base, especially up to this point.
I think that's somewhat true, but I also think that the way that these fan bases function is... That part, the political component of the fan base, maybe doesn't always get activated. Like, I'm thinking about Tyler Childers here. Yeah. And Tyler Childers put out a video recently about a gay couple.
We were never made to run.
This podcast is supported by the new Porsche Panamera. When you follow the crowd, you lose something that few possess. Originality. By forging your own path and embracing the unknown, living fearlessly, without limits or reservations, and trusting your instincts, you'll chart a brave new course of your own. The new Porsche Panamera. Choose boldly.
There were people on TikTok that I was watching who were like, hey, man, you don't know who your fans are. Your fans don't appreciate that. And Tyler Childers was like, literally, bro, I've been on this for like 5 years. Like, if you're my fan, like, are you really my fan?
Like when people are like, I can't believe Rage Against the Machine.
So I think that the thing that people are identifying in Zach Bryan and connecting in is not political. It's emotional, it's cathartic, it's some other thing. And this is maybe the first moment outside of when I saw him shush the Let's Go Brandon chant, where the people who show up to sing along have to then peel back the extra layer and be like, what am I singing along to exactly?
Yeah.
And the truth is, if you listen to this album, you're not listening to an album about politics
or culture war,
or anything like that. Nothing
not at
remotely.
All.
Tiny bit. There's like a little bit of a wink. There's a Star Spangled Banner intro that feels a little bit like nudge nudge early in the record. But for the most part, this is a record about male sadness. It's a male tears record.
Yes.
I wish I had a male tears mug.
Yeah.
That should be the next podcast deluxe merch.
Male tears.
Male tears.
Is it a tear rolling off of the Zach Bryan mugshot? I will say, I think this is a huge win for him. I know he seems disappointed in himself, but like, you're doing great, pal. Like, you got through this. You didn't commit a crime. It's a victimless crime.
Yeah.
you know, like, and if he doesn't sell the t-shirts, people are going to make them themselves and they're going to be wearing
like Trump.
The mugshot. Yeah, they're going to be wearing the to his concerts, whether he likes it or not. So, like, might as well cash out, you know? Like, I just think, like, I think not only did the perfect thing happen to make him cooler, but he handled it in such a way that, like, the only people who are left mad at him are, like, the people being like, I know you don't love cups that much.
Right, well, that's what I was wondering is, like, do you think... Because I actually don't think his audience is quite as right-leaning as you do. Do you think the people who see in him... like the alternative to country. Like, I mean, these are like my least favorite country music.
Like,
fans.
I don't like any country except.
Or even like.
Droll or whatever.
Yeah, like that, but also kind of like this is real. Like, that's like, not because, like, the I don't like country besides Sturgill is that could be a person who listens to no country music at all. Yeah. But, like, for me, like, the sort of like Americana,
I folks, only like authentic.
Yeah. Like, I mean, just like, yeah. Like, I just, I detest it so much. Like, what a banal way to like move through the world of like polyvalent aesthetics. What an absolute mess. But there are people who I think view Zach Bryan through that lens. And I wonder if they're like, again, cops.
But you're not going to stop listening to them.
Well, I don't know. But what if there's another shoe that's going to drop? What if
a second angle on the dash cam?
No, but what if another shoe is as a make good?
He puts a blue line on his truck.
He goes and plays like a Vinita, Oklahoma Sheriff's Department fundraiser.
No, see, I think this is where I trust him to walk the line. I think he's like, he seems really intent. I do think he seems genuinely disappointed in himself because like his mom's mad at him or whatever, or his family. But I do think he is.
He's also a Navy, discipline and order, and like, I should not be out of line. Yes. And actually, like, one of the things that I found really striking watching him operate in real time is like, this is a very disciplined person. And if he's choosing to not be disciplined, he made that choice.
Yes.
And I think the tension of the footage is like, there's a moment where he like let it get a little too hot.
And then he comes back.
He has to pull it right
back. That's why I think like this made me trust in his ability to maneuver as a famous person moving forward. Like, I think he's good.
You want to know someone who's immune to pressures, immune to being pulled in any other direction, about a person who truly does not care about what anybody thinks about him, certainly doesn't care about what we think about him, but we love, and that is Cameron. Can I ask you a question that came in via the DMs?
Yeah.
This is from Jonathan Alcindor, who first says, can't believe I've never met you in person. Which is true, because Jonathan was in
the music business.
Yeah, in the city. So, you know, catch us outside. That's number one.
In a friendly way.
Please. I mean, you know, like, we're ready
not
to go.
Not in like a...
No, but we're ready to go. If that's what it comes to, we're ready to go. Okay, so this is... First of all, he's talking about Deion Sanders. Mm-hmm. We were talking about, inspired mm-hmm. by our conversation with Deion Sanders. Makes me wonder about your thoughts on Cameron's second life as a sports personality with Mace on their show, It Is What It Is. Been an avid watcher of it for the last 5 or so months. Great chemistry, no surprise. Funny, and they just inked a deal with some sports betting company.
Yeah, Underdog Fantasy, I think.
No idea what that is.
Yeah.
All feels in line with the realitification of sports, which
we and rap. About.
And rap. And struggles weighing on ESPN and traditional sports media. So what do we think about Cameron's It Is What It Is? I've only consumed it, for the record, via IG Reels, much like many people are consuming this show via IG Reels. We see you. We honor you. I've only really consumed it that way.
Yep.
I haven't sat and watched a full episode.
Yeah, although we should do a crossover episode. That's what we should really
Phenomenal.
Do. It Is What It Is deluxe.
It's... Cameron, first of all, former high school basketball star.
Yep.
You know, played junior college, like didn't
JUCO. JUCO. He lets you know over and over again throughout the discography.
According to the New York Times 50 Rappers Project, which we did, Cam got kicked out of JUCO because he went home for Thanksgiving and brought back to Texas the tape of the first Mobb Deep single, or not the first, but like, you know, of Shook Ones, and basically got too much of a New York mentality and probably
did something he shouldn't have.
Did something he shouldn't have and just got sent right back to the city. And now, 30 years later, we have It Is What It Is.
I mean, he's always been one of the best talking rappers, like one of the best rappers at holding forth mm-hmm. and basically like New York style, just talking shit.
Yeah.
Like, and so it makes perfect sense that you'd want him and Mace, two people who both came up together. Mace was an early mentor, fell out, had beef. They seem to have reconciled. You would just listen to them talk for hours, no matter what, you know. Cam made good use of his, wrestling bona fides throughout his rap career.
Yeah.
And yeah, it makes perfect sense that he could use his
40s and 50s. How old is Cam now? He's probably late 40s, I think.
Probably about right.
That he can just be charming on camera.
Okay, but here's... Okay, but a lot of rappers are charming on camera, right? But an interesting thing about Cameron is, like, unlike LL Cool J, unlike Ice-T, unlike Method Man, rough contemporary, a little bit older.
Cam did some acting, though.
This is what I'm saying. But, like, those are rappers who have made a conscious decision to either sandpaper their edges or fully devote themselves to the work of the Hollywood system, whether via film or television or both. Cameron is an incredibly charismatic figure who has, frankly, chosen to not do that. I think it's safe to say, outside of the Paid in Full, first of all, Paid in Full. Do you see Paid in Full in theaters?
No.
The only movie screening I've ever been to in New York where I was fully frisked and wanded before going in.
At the original
screening. At a theater. Screening. Yeah, at like a regular.
Not like a, no, not a like repertory a pub, screening.
No, not like a press screening.
Not at Metrograph.
No, so Cam's in that, but like Cam's playing Cam. You know, it's like he's not acting in the classical sense.
Yeah. He has some homemade films too that were put out on DVD later in his career.
I have always found it pointed that even though he's fundamentally a charismatic figure, that he has not chosen to lean into that.
Yeah.
The only time I can think that he has, there was a TV show maybe 2 years ago called Queens, which is about a group of female rappers on a comeback. Mm-hmm. Cam was a romantic interest, I think, for one of them. I think I have that right. I might be wrong, but it's something along those lines. And that was the first time where I was like, oh, Cam is doing something that's not Cam. He's playing a role.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, maybe that's the direction he's heading in. Maybe there is Hollywood for him. Maybe there are bigger roles, et cetera. Here's the striking thing about it is what it is. Takes the Queens thing, just get that out.
Forget
of
it.
Forget yeah. it. If anything, we're going
wilder.
Back, we're going Dipset mixtape era. And first of all, the outfits, doing a lot of work. He's doing a lot of work on the outfits. But to be middle-aged, like, sort of not really like leaning into your rapping career anymore, but to still effectively be a rap star just in another medium.
Yep.
That to me, I haven't seen loads of that.
Budden is the blueprint. Like Joe Budden being able to make a name for himself way bigger as a podcaster
than as a rapper.
From,
did you see the thing that point. He only just got a gold plaque for Pump It Up? That song is 20 plus years old.
Yeah. And I think, yeah, podcasting really opens the door for these guys who do not, like you say, want to be sanded down. And to the point where they lean into controversy. Like, it is what it is. Cam's podcast with Mace. Video podcast, would you call it?
Sure.
And YouTube show.
Yes.
Deluxe podcast. Mm-hmm. They recently had O.J. Simpson as a guest. Just talking about running backs.
Okay, did you watch the episode?
I watched some of the episode.
They do not ask him about crimes.
I have to imagine they did not.
So that brings me to the question, who are your top five running backs?
King Henry is pretty close to Jim Brown. He's just a big, strong guy.
I think they kept it to sports. They stuck to sports with a couple jokes in there. But I mean, and look, they had Antonio Brown on, who's a embattled, former.
It is NFL a home. Player. It does seem like it is a home for embattled. You know, people who maybe ESPN would not have on.
Yes,
and to Jonathan's question, to what degree does the success of a show like this actually reflect not simply on Cam or Mace or Cam's charisma or whatnot, but reflect upon, hey, there's an audience for sports content that conventional sports media is actually not addressing.
Well,
this is also a Barstool.
I was going to say, like Cam is just doing Barstool, but in Cam style.
Yeah.
Which more power to him. The more Cam we can have in our lives, I think the better.
Do you think though that this gnaws away at the authority of conventional sport? I saw a photo of Cam and Shannon Sharpe together, and it's like I assume they want to do different things, but on some level is Cam more important to the sports discourse than Shannon Sharp, or could he be?
Yeah, I think all of these guys unleashed can reach their own audiences, and we'll just continue to see that, whether it's the players like Draymond Green doing his podcast
yeah.
or people who are once on-air personalities who realize they can branch out on their own. And it's happened across all of media, so there's no reason why sports wouldn't also fall into that pattern.
Songs of the week?
What do you got?
Honestly, like, I thought it was a weird week. Like, there's that new Megan and Cardi song.
Mm-hmm. Bongos.
Yeah, which I think is fine. Like, it's certainly not as good as WAP. A few things are. But I don't know. I didn't, if anything, the release of it in this particular time felt like a rejoinder to like a Nicki moment.
Yeah.
Where like Nicki had a song that was like pretty decent last week. And I think they were just like, we're just going to drop this song. Whatever, you know, talk about meta narratives, right? So I was poking around and I found a lot of the other stuff to be pretty disappointing. But I found something that by a person that I was not terribly familiar with previously, but this record just frankly just goes, like, it just like unrelenting goes. So it's by Emilia, who is an Argentine singer. It is called GTA.mp3. So we love that. We love your brow is furrowing.
Oh, I thought you saw a sparkle of excitement.
No, I saw the opposite.
Oh, okay. All right, I'm open minded.
Which is it?
I'm open minded. I like that.
You like that?
Yeah.
Okay. I like it too. I mean, it is a little bit like the performance of Y2K-ness. Like, it's fine. And the song is like the performance of Y2K-ness. But like, I have to figure out who the producer is, because whoever this producer is, this person should be like a multimillionaire. Like, this record absolutely goes. It's hard. It's fast. It's like chaotic, but also like incredibly winky and knowing at the same time. I don't know. Big fan. Emilia. GTA.mp3. Mirando cuando ella te besa, te toco en secreto bajo la mesa. Yo tengo un show pa' verte en privado. Si a vos te interesa, yo quiero otra noche. What you got, Playboy?
I have a song from the new album by Lil Peep, rest in peace, and I Love McConan.
Yep.
His close collaborator, especially late in his career.
Yep.
This album is called Diamonds, and it was recorded, I believe, in the summer of 2017, not long before Lil Peep passed away, in November 2017, of an accidental overdose. You know, Peep, I think, one of our shared favorite artists of his era, you know, was really doing something interesting, bringing emo and rock sounds into this wave of SoundCloud rap, really at the forefront of something, incredible charisma and star power, found a, you know, kin, I think, in McConan, who is also a bit of an outsider, who had
especially in that era, in that moment, like
ahead McConan, of his time. Both of them.
Like McConan was like ahead of his time, and then cast out.
Yeah,
and then Peep being from an era, probably for whom early McConan was like really important.
Yeah,
you know, I don't remember the exact
age. Yeah, they were working,
but I'm sure when Peep was like 13 to 16, that's when McConan was like the most popping on the internet, if I had to guess.
Yep.
And then McConan sort of like gets washed out of the story, and then Peep like brings him back.
Yes. And Peep's mother, Liza, has been a very, very, very careful and thoughtful steward of his legacy.
Very much.
And worked with his closest collaborators to make sure the music he had left was released in a fashion that he would have wanted and respected. And I think this is like the last basically comprehensive body of work that they're putting out from his his archives. The first song, Ballin', there's a lot of good songs on this album. Really nice to hear them doing their vocal interplay.
When I was writing about the first posthumous Lil Peep record, interviewed like the people who work with him. Obviously, there's been a some legal situations and a rift between Peep's former business partners and the family, but these were in, I don't want to say simpler times, but this was in an earlier era. But I mean, I talked to McConan for that story, and that it was unclear if that music really would ever see the light of day at that point. But I just have a very, very vivid memory. I can like remember what the room looked like, what the light looked like. I feel like he hadn't really unburdened himself about that era, certainly not to a journalist at that point. The depth of feeling, the sadness, the tears, and the helplessness, like both losing someone who understood your creative vision, losing a friend, and also you made this music, you made this work, and for what? Just a profoundly hard interview, like a really, really, it really stuck with me for a long time talking to him for that story. Really, really did. So, which makes me really glad that this has finally like come full circle.
Yeah, and there is joy. You know, both these artists deal in dark themes sometimes, but there's also, you can hear them having fun.
Yeah, sure.
And yeah, this opening track, Ball, and I think just a nice little taste of what they had going.
Great, let's do it.
Life gets hard, so I gotta go hard, and I gotta go all in, baby. If we ballin', then we ballin', baby. Quit callin', I ain't with the drama, I'ma stop talking. Life gets hard, so I gotta go hard, and I gotta go all in, baby. If we ballin', then we ballin', baby. Quit callin', I ain't with the drama, I'ma stop talking.
Let's do it.
You wanna eat a little bit of popcorn?
I do, actually. This is, I mean, this is another, you want to talk about sicko mode.
This is another
here.
Collab.
that is, in fact, another
collab. May or may not need to exist. This is Smart Food Popcorn.
We really love collabs. I do want to say
Doritos Cool Ranch flavor.
I do want to say there are a few things I enjoy more than like walking into like a random corner store somewhere and just sort of perusing the aisles and seeing two logos next to each other that absolutely should not be on the same packaging.
Yep.
That is a joy. All of you sickos who work for these companies who are like, what if we just partnered with so-and-so? You're doing great, sweetie.
Yeah. And even within brands, like you have the Lay's now that are Cheetos flavored, the Funyuns chips. Right. And this is sort of along those lines. Two different snacks.
And also with this, two different like ideological profiles.
Okay. I have something.
Say what it is. Tell what it is.
Yeah. This is Smart Food Cool Ranch Doritos flavored popcorn.
As you had pointed out before, I find Cool Ranch Doritos to be spicy.
A little bit spicy. Yeah. I hope your palate is okay. So the normal good smart food is the white cheddar, which is like a classic snack. Yeah. But this is Doritos flavored. 70 calories per cup, so healthy. I do want to say one thing about it, but I need you to take a bite first. A lot of garlic and onion. These are breath killers.
Okay.
I like it, though.
Okay. I'm listening. Say what you need to say.
I need to say that these expired on August 15th.
Forgive me. I don't play the piano. That's where I'm going to start. But where am I going to go? But like the left hand's doing a totally different thing than the right hand's doing. Mm-hmm. Like one hand is like, and the left hand's like, that's what this is doing. Like the smart food thing is going like this. And the Cool Ranch Doritos thing is like, and I feel like they're both happening at the same time. They're actively at war with each other. I don't find this to be a satisfying snack on its own. And I find the non-interaction of the two things too chaotic.
Also doesn't particularly taste like a Cool Ranch Dorito.
Doesn't particularly taste like really either thing.
No.
It tastes more like smart food popcorn.
Yep.
Bro.
It's like a 4 out of 10.
Yeah, I was going to say it's a 3. Also, it's like, it's in my nose. Like, it's just like whatever's in there. It's, okay.
Moving on from
that. Okay. Sorry to end on a down note.
May we never speak of it again.
Yeah. That is our show. Listen to every podcast ever at nytimes.com/podcast. Podcast Deluxe is on YouTube, where you should check it out. tinyurl.com/podcastdeluxe is where you can find the entire suite of episodes. Get in our Discord or our Facebook group or email us questions. You can email us at podcast@nytimes.com. or tinyurl.com/podcast Facebook or /podcast Discord. Get in there, ask questions there, talk to other folks who are watching the show, and subscribe to podcasts anywhere you get your audio and video audio content, on YouTube, on Apple, on Spotify, et cetera, et cetera. Our senior producer is Sori Roque. Our editor is Jamie Heffitz. We want to thank Karen Gans, Pedro Rosado, Leslie Davis, as always. We'll be back next week.